Blog Talk Radio.
Spirit of Truth Ministry is delighted to bring you The Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling, where we test the beliefs of Christianity against the very words of Jesus that he gave his own eyewitness disciples. Join us for a unique and challenging study into truth, justice, and the kingdom of heaven. Welcome, everyone, on this February 11, 2017. My name is Dennis Neufeld, and I am here with Suzette, Larry, Don, and Rick, and we are about ready to start our study of entitled The Revelation of Jesus, and we are glad that you are here with us to participate in any way that you see fit. We have our chat room open, so if you want to ask questions or make comments, you're welcome to do that there, and I will pass those along to the crew. We also have our websites put up on the chat room, and what's the matter?
Sure.
Oh, there we go. Sorry. You can pass around the other way. There we go. Okay. We have websites up on the chat room. The first one is listed as WordPress website. That's spiritoftruthministry.net. There you will find all sorts of interesting and wonderful things to read. And as just a point of interest, today our WordPress site has 9,681. A few minutes ago we had 6,980, and we gained one already since we started this. So this is a place where you can go and find our book, The Spirit of the Church, written by Rick Sterling and me. You can find all sorts of great writing, including The Grand Plan, which is a six-part, I guess you might even call it a treatise on how things are supposed to work out from the beginning to the end, and how things have been going, and I think you'll find it fascinating. So you can take a look at that. Let's have prayer, and we'll get started. Father in heaven, we are here called according to your will, each by name, to listen and to learn and to grow together in the truth. Father, the principal things that we need to learn the truth are self-honesty and integrity. And without both of those, no one can find the truth. This is why Jesus said, "Those who are already of the truth will hear my voice." Father, give us that self-honesty, that brutal self-honesty, and that unshakable integrity so that we can know the truth of God, so that truth will eventually set us free. We thank you for this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Good morning, Suzette. Nice to see you. Good morning, Larry and Dr. Don and Mike. Michael Mibayo is over there.
Top of the morning to you.
Top of the morning to you, of course. Good. And, of course, our good friend and
founder of Spirit of Truth Ministry 23 years ago. Oh, we didn't know it at the time. Rick, how are you this morning, Rick Sterling?
I'm doing well. Enjoying again the rain. God's guidance of his people in spite of their unfaithfulness. That's the title of that the translators have given to the chapter in Psalms 78. Why would God bother with unfaithful people? And by unfaithful, does that mean that they don't believe in him? I know they believed in him because they complained incessantly about their miserable conditions and situation which they found themselves in. What they failed to recognize was that the situation that they were in had been designed so that they would be able to learn what they needed to know so that they would know their God. As I was growing up, I was attending the Seventh-day Adventist school. I started in first grade, and I graduated from 12th grade in not only a Seventh-day Adventist school, but in the same Seventh-day Adventist school I started first grade in. Every year, one of the classes that I was required to take was Bible. I was always very good in Bible class. I could get an A without even studying. One thing I was told in Bible class when we would study that the time when Israel was in Egypt and the time when God contacted Moses, told him to go tell Pharaoh to let his people go. What I was told was that how this all started was Pharaoh had decreed that every male child born to the Hebrews was to be put to death. And Jochebed, if I remember right in the deep, dark recesses of my memory, Jochebed was Moses' mother. Amram was his father. And so Jochebed did not want her son to be put to death and hid him in a basket made of bulrushes. And of course, Pharaoh's daughter came down to bathe, saw the baby in the basket, and decided to adopt him as her son. And Miriam, Moses' sister, was hiding and saw what was going on, saw Pharaoh's daughter wanted to adopt her brother. And so she appeared and offered her mother to be the wet nurse and to raise this baby up to the age of accountability, which I believe at the time was 13 years old. And Jochebed taught Moses about the God of their fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that, in fact, this was going on throughout the Nile Delta area, which where the Hebrews lived, it was called the Land of Goshen. And the Hebrews living there had faithfully maintained the worship of their God, had taught it to their children as they were growing up there in the land of Egypt. so that when God led them out of Egypt on that awful day or night, all of Israel knew the God that was leading them out. I find that hard to believe. In fact, what it looks like is that these people who were the offspring of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had little, if any, knowledge that there was any other God but the gods of Egypt that they had come to know and recognize.
Okay, could I insert something here? How many years? How many years?
400 years.
400 years, okay. When this country was founded, it was founded as one of the most incredible things that ever happened. Isn't that right? With our founding fathers, the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That's half that time, 200 years. How many details do the people today know about how our country was founded?
Yeah.
And that was twice as long.
A very good point, Don. Yeah.
That was twice as long.
Yeah. Most of their people were illiterate.
Wow. You see, I'm not sure that's not true today.
Yeah.
About some things.
In fact, Moses, whom we were told that his mother Jochebed raised him up to know the God of Israel and to reckon and so on. And when Moses came into the presence of the God of Israel in a bush that was on fire but wasn't being consumed, Moses didn't know what God he was talking to. He didn't know, God, you're God? What
yeah.
What's your name?
Who are you?
Who should I say?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Why doesn't God in that bush say to Moses, well, I'm the God your mother taught you about?
Okay.
Why am I saying this? Because people have the mistaken idea that the God that their parents taught them about is the God that they're worshiping. And yes, they are, but it's not the God they think they're worshiping. They're worshiping the God of this world. God's guidance of his people in spite of their unfaithfulness. How can someone be unfaithful to a God they do not know? God took them out of Egypt into the wilderness, not because he wanted to teach them a lesson. He wanted to teach them about himself. He wanted Israel, people that he had chosen, that he had promised to his friend Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, whose name changed Israel. These are the children of Israel. He wanted them to know him. He had to bring them out into the wilderness. There were no other nations that they were living among to distract them. He needed their undivided attention. And what better place in the middle of nowhere could God have their undivided attention, where they couldn't go and pick fruit from trees or harvest grain from the ground or drink water in a barren, dry land. God was teaching them that he was their life. He gave them everything that they need: food to eat, water to drink, clothes to wear, families. He would take care of them. He he did. They saw a different way. They saw that God was cruel. Why, he brought our victim. And then they demand food before he gave it. Psalms chapter 78, starting verse 1. Listen, O my people, to my instruction. Incline your ears to the word of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known. And our fathers have told us, we will not conceal them from their children, but tell the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength, his wondrous works that he has done. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should teach them to their children, that the generation come might know the children yet born, that they may arise and tell them to their children. That is what is meant in the fifth commandment. Honor your father and your mother, that your days long, in which the Lord thy God giveth thee. If the fathers are teaching the children the information about the God of Israel from the time that they were able to know what they were hearing, teach them that God had established a testimony in Jacob, that is also Israel, a testimony. We talked about a testimony last week. What is a testimony? It is an eyewitness account that is offered in the process of discovery, where that which is being discovered is the truth in the matter.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, and when you did, I thought about what it was to witness an accident. What are the chances of there being an actual eyewitness to any accident? I mean, they're watching and two cars come together. Normally, you hear the crash, you turn around and you look and you see the result of it, but you don't actually see the action of it. So when a policeman comes to investigate the accident, you're standing there, he might, or she might walk up to you and say, did you see what happened? Many people in that situation will say yes when they only saw the result. But they didn't actually see one car coming and then the other car coming and trying to avoid the dog, you know, all of the other stuff that went awry. Here we have in the Bible, whether they are named or not, we have the identity of at least two writers that were eyewitnesses to what Jesus did and said while he was here on earth. And they are credible because they confirm each other. Matthew confirms John, John confirms Matthew. And Mark is in there too, but Mark was not an eyewitness. Mark didn't see these things.
But what information he had, we
came
know
from,
he was associated
with
eyewitnesses.
Exactly.
And
right.
So he would write an account. And incidentally, in the book of Mark, the last chapter,
the last few verses,
should end with verse 8.
Right. The rest of it was added on
the oldest
much later.
Manuscripts do not have verses 9 on to the end.
So the idea of an eyewitness is that they actually had personal experience with what happened. It didn't occur out of their sight, even if they might have been close by. So, and one of the things that we know about Luke is that Luke states clearly that he investigated what it was that he wrote down.
He talked to eyewitnesses.
He talked to people who said they were eyewitnesses.
What we see in Luke is that he interprets the information according to his bias. And his bias
is created by
is Pauline and
its identity. Right.
For he, God, established a testimony and appointed a law in Israel. Now, you've heard me talk many times about the curse, as Paul calls it, the curse of the law. And what Paul is referring to is Deuteronomy 27, verse 26, where God curses all those who do not abide by everything written in the book of the law to perform them. And you think, well, that's kind of harsh. Why would God curse? Why would God curse anybody? God knows exactly what he's doing, why he's doing it, and why it is necessary to do it. You see, if God gave a law and said, I want you to keep the law, but he didn't say what he would do if you didn't keep the law, would he have the authority to do anything to those who didn't keep the law? Well, I guess that's a tough question to answer. Have there ever been any laws written that didn't contain what would be done to the lawbreaker if they broke the law? If they broke that law?
There's always
penalty.
Yeah.
Okay, so if God gives a law and he says, this is the law, mm-hmm. and I would like you to abide by the law, to, you know, good law, mm-hmm. and I strongly suggest that you keep it because I would be a good people. And if he left it at that, could he have done what he did to them for breaking the law? Mm-hmm. No.
It was only a suggestion.
He needs to say, if you don't keep the law, this is what will happen to you. Mm-hmm. And do you think that God would require something on pain of death that he knew there was no one, no human being ever born who had ever lived, who was living, who would live, that could keep it?
And that would apply to Adam and Eve in the garden as
right.
well.
That was just a suggestion that they not eat from that.
Right. God really wasn't going
no.
to kill them because
no.
it turns out that God didn't kill them.
Right.
So, you know.
It was just a
So, you understand that God gave them the law and said, you are required to obey everything that is written in the law, or if you don't, this is what will happen to you. This is the penalty that is associated with breaking the law. And when he established the testimony in Jacob, appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers, that they should teach them to their children and tell them to their children, that they should put their confidence in God. There's a tough one.
Yeah.
Put their confidence in God. Now, that's something they needed to learn that they never learned as a nation. Oh, yes, there were individuals who put their confidence in God. And look what happened to them. Caleb and Joshua. What happened to Caleb and Joshua? They went into Promised Land. Joshua took over Moses from Moses. And Caleb got the land that he wanted. They said, where would you like to, what land would you like to have? And he chose the land he wanted, and that's what he was given. Why? Because they put their confidence in God. Where is your confidence? Is your confidence in God? Sometimes I have a little hard time. It doesn't last for long, but, and I'm not proud of it, but there are times when I think, you know, and what is what I'm doing, God, is it from God, and is it what God wants me to do? I can find a whole raft of people who will tell me that, you know, I'm, you know, I'm sincere, but more sincerely misguided.
There's more sin in sincere there, you know. By the way, patience does play a small role in that confidence issue.
As Dennis mentioned earlier, I've been doing this for 23 years plus, actually 23 and a half years. And when I look around the table here in the kitchen, I see people who have been with for
studio
and and Dennis is the newcomer.
That's right. You are? Yeah, I came in here all the last room.
That they should put their confidence in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. Larry, did you want to say something?
The thought that I'm sure you're leading up to is confidence requires knowledge and knowing in what or whom you have confidence.
Boy, does it
in.
Ever.
Knowledge, confidence, and patience are actually impossible.
That they should put their confidence in God, not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. And not be like their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that did not prepare its heart. Oh, there it is again. And whose spirit was not faithful to God. Sons of Ephraim were archers equipped with bows, yet they turned back in the day of battle. They did not keep the covenant of God and refused to walk in his law. They forgot his deeds and his miracles that he had shown them. He wrought wonders before their fathers in the land of Egypt, in the field of Zoan. He divided the sea and caused them to move through, and he made the water stand like a heap. Then he led them with the cloud by day, and all the night light of fire. He split the rocks in the wilderness and gave them abundant drink like the ocean depths. He brought forth streams also from the rock and caused waters to run down like rivers. Yet they still continued to sin against him, to rebel against the Most High in the desert. And in their heart, they put God to the test by asking food according to their desire. Then they spoke against God. They said, "Can God prepare a table in the wilderness?" Behold, he struck the rock so that waters gushed out and streams were overflowing. Can he give bread also? Will he provide meat for his people? Therefore, the Lord heard and was full of wrath. Do you know what that means? He was totally PO'd.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to quite use that one, but yes.
That's close.
And a fire was kindled against Jacob, and anger also mounted against Israel, because he did not believe in God and did not trust in his salvation. Yet he commanded the clouds above and the doors of heaven, and he rained down manna upon them to eat, and gave them food from heaven. Man did eat the bread of angels. He sent them food in abundance. John chapter 10. Yes, in chapter 78, and we're going to John chapter 10. And of course, this comes after that profound event where the Son of God gave sight to a man who had been born blind. And just to set that so that we could understand it, I've gone over it a few times before, and just briefly. Those of you who have listened for some time know that I have informed everyone. I've never hesitated, but I've said it right out. We are all born blind, spiritually. We are all born blind. We do not have the truth. We are like the Hebrews that lived in the land of Goshen, who had an honorable heritage, but had no clue about the God who talked to forefathers. We're told the story about God who talked to Abraham, to Isaac and Jacob, to God who gave Joseph dreams, and made him second in command over all the land of Egypt for his faithfulness.
Does that make it a great mythology, but no practical way to apply it to reality?
We're told the stories of Moses. of Joshua and Samuel, David, of Isaiah and Jeremiah, Ezekiel and Daniel. We're told of the prophets. As I said, my dad was a Seventh-day Adventist minister. I grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist church, and I believed that the Seventh-day Adventist had the truth, or at least more truth than any of the others. They had a heritage, which I found out later on was nothing to be proud of. I was born blind, but I wanted to see. I would pray. I've said this, as far back as I can remember, God has always been real to me. When I've prayed, I prayed knowing that God would hear me. And I knew well the account of Solomon. And I contemplate the idea of having that level of wisdom. And given that level of wisdom, what would I do with it if I had that wisdom? Would I show it off? Would I use it in the wrong way? Because it seems like Solomon used it in the wrong way. I prayed. I prayed that God would give me a measure of wisdom according to his will. That if he would give me the wisdom of Solomon, I would try hard to use it to honor God. If you pray for wisdom and you are sincere, you better be prepared to know what to do with it. The man was born blind, just as we are all born blind. And people are happy in their blindness because they don't know they're blind. Everybody else around them is blind. How is it then that you come to know that you're blind? I remember. And it was a little unsettling at first. Ultimately, I had to unlearn almost everything I had been taught about the truth. And you find how quickly that sets you apart from everyone else that you have been associating with for a long time. Well, they're nice about it, as long as you temper what you say, keep it palatable. But then I read that, first of all, it was the religious leaders that were questioning the validity of this man born blind. They didn't believe he'd been born blind. How did they know he'd been born blind? Maybe this was just another trick. So they questioned his parents. They questioned him again. He says, whoa, what are you asking me the same question? Do you want to be his disciples too? I don't know that he could have said something that would have incensed them any more than that. And for those who say that Jesus did not come for judgment, Jesus came to save the world, I offer John 9:39. Because John 9:39 states quite clearly in Jesus' own words, for judgment I came into this world. Okay, so either he came into this world for judgment, or he came in this world to save, or he came into this world for both. You see, what is decided in the judgment? Yeah, whether you're going to be saved or whether you're going to be destroyed. And that's why he came into this world. That those who do not see may see. Huh. Well, I guess then it was a good thing I was born blind. And I guess it's a good thing that we were all born blind, because if we weren't born blind, yes, Larry.
Well, we can't discuss this these texts without also including and reconciling John 3:17-19.
Yes.
So there's the difference between judging the world and providing the conditions in which the world be judged.
He didn't say I came to judge the world. He said it was for judgment that I came. Now, you remember I read back in Psalm 78 about the testimony and what a testimony is? Mm-hmm. What is a testimony? Someone who knows the truth and who states the truth.
Right.
So in judgment, you are judged upon whether you accepted the truth or rejected the truth. Mm-hmm. And Jesus makes the point here.
And the one providing the truth isn't necessarily the judge.
But, yeah, and I didn't say he was. See, he said it is for judgment. Yeah. He didn't say I came to judge the world. He said it was for the judgment that I came.
And on the concept of testimony and testifying, John 3:11. So John 3 is essential to John 9.
Do you see that the whole, you could go to 8. Go to John 8. Truly I say to you, if you abide in my word, you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth. And the truth will set you free. Set you free from what? Slavery to sin. So if you don't know the truth, what are you? A slave to sin. Why? Because you believe and practice a lie, but you don't know it's a lie. How will you come to know it's a lie? If you go to his testimony and see it's a lie, and you accept his testimony, and that is for judgment.
Sounds like there's a reading, study, and understanding opportunity here.
What I'm saying is that you can't just take one little part of Jesus' testimony, John 3:16, and say that is the sum total of what his testimony is. And then, of course, you take it out of context as well as out of everything else that he said.
Paul was comfortable doing that.
Of course he was. And everybody who believes in Paul as a true truth teller. For judgment, I came into this world that those who do not see may see. And that those who see may become blind. Those of the Pharisees who were with him heard these things and said to him, "We are not blind too, are we?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no sin. But since you say we see, your sin remains." Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber.
John 10:1.
But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. Keep that in mind, because as he goes on, you need to remember what he said before. Each one of these is an intricate part of the whole that you need to understand. He who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. Go back to John 8 and what I just read to you. John 8:31-32. To those who had believed, to the Jews who had believed, he said, "If you abide in my word, you are truly disciples of mine." Realizing that studying his word, you know his testimony. And that is what he means by entering through the door. He is using spiritual metaphors to those who are blind but want to see. In the account of the man born blind, what do we see? If you go back to chapter 9, verse 1, and as he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned?" And what did Jesus say? This is not a result of sin. Whoa. What is it then? Jesus answered, "It was neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but it was in order that the works of God might be displayed in him." Do you see that God does nothing without teaching us something? And what he's saying here is God is trying to tell us what we are in. At the end, he says, you know, "I for judgment I came to the world that those who do not see may see." So what did he do to this man? "While I'm in the world, I am the light of the world." When he said this, he spat on the ground, he made clay of the spittle, and applied the clay to his eyes, and said, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which is translated "sent." One sent. A blind man has his eyes acted upon by the Son of God, and he is sent. Wow. And so he went away and washed and came back seeing. How incredible is that? What is the first demand of righteousness? No.
Knowing the rule. Knowing
no. Baptism. Isn't that what Jesus said to John the Baptist? When John the Baptist said, you should be baptizing me. And Jesus said, permit it now so that all the demands of righteousness can be met. And while we are still in the water, we come up. While we are still in the water, what is it that we experience for the first time? Sight.
I was just going to say, so baptism is an expression of wanting to see.
When you come up out of the water, when Jesus came up out of the water, what did he do? Well, some say he went out in the wilderness. I'm not real sure about that, even though it is in three of the Gospels. It is not in John. And I know things were added. And I'm not trying to take anything away. I'm not saying that when we come out of the baptism that we need to be tested by the devil and we need to pass the test. What did Jesus do when he came out of the water? He was anointed by the Holy Spirit and he began his ministry. That is what I'm talking about. The blind man who received his sight did what? He began his ministry.
Right. Began to tell everybody about it.
Yes.
I also find it fascinating, just as an observation, that when a person is baptized, I would say most of the time when they go into the water, they close their eyes. Most of us are not comfortable opening our eyes underwater.
Right.
Although if you swim, you do that all the time. But that's a different situation. When you are baptized and put underneath the water, you close your eyes. And what happens when you come out? And you wipe the water off you, and then you open your eyes.
Now, Jesus was demonstrating the demands of righteousness, and baptism was appropriately the first one of those demands. But if the ministry was the second one or the next one, his situation is far different than from what our situation is. He had pre-existing knowledge and testimony to deliver that we do not have immediately following baptism.
You remember what I said early on in the study about wisdom? If you ask God for wisdom and you are sincere,
be
prepared, because he will probably give it to you.
In fact, that's true.
You know, we're told that Solomon asked for wisdom. He could have asked for wealth. He could have asked for power. He could have asked, but he asked for wisdom. And with wisdom came wealth and power and some other things that, you know,
responsibility and opportunity.
You have, when God gives you wisdom, that is the greatest thing that God can ever give. That is the greatest thing that God can ever give one is wisdom. Because with wisdom comes a whole host of other things that may or may not be healthy to your spiritual character. So, going in through the door, when he says to him, he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice. Now, when he's saying his voice, that could mean one of two things. Could mean he hears the voice of the shepherd, but you see here in this account so far. Remember I said you need to watch this step by step. Jesus has identified himself as the door, not the shepherd. And that he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. And the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. The shepherd of the sheep is speaking from the words of the true shepherd, who is the door and also the good shepherd. But Jesus, the Son of God, is not here personally, visibly on earth, gathering his sheep together, looking for the lost sheep. But he is active in that endeavor through the shepherds who have entered by the door.
And we can associate this then with Matthew 24, 42 to 51, the faithful and wise servant and his fellow servants who become those shepherds.
His voice is spoken by those who have entered the door, because that's the only voice they know. That's the only voice they're saying. His voice is articulated by them. And it is his voice that his sheep recognize. The lost sheep are lost because they're in the world and the world is not in them, so to speak.
They're in the world and they're blind in the world.
And when they hear the voice of truth, articulated from the testimony of the Son of God who came here to articulate the truth to eyewitnesses and ear witnesses. Who wrote this down? I wouldn't be able to share this with you unless John had written it down and it had been preserved. So you have a choice. You can say, well, how do I know that John wrote this? And how do I know that Jesus said this and John wrote it? And how do I know that whether Jesus said this and John wrote it, that 2,000 years later, I'm reading this, how can I be confident that this is the testimony? Well, I'll tell you, you let wisdom work in your mind and your heart. And what you will understand is that God sent his Son into the world to testify to the truth. And that if that was an important thing for God to do, and I can tell you that it was, that God, who created everything, is perfectly capable of preserving the word, just as the planted seed is preserved. He harvested where he did not sow, gathered where he did not plant. That's what this is. God is able to preserve this. And we can be confident that whether or not these what he said, we can be confident that what he taught is here, and we can read it and we can understand it. The Holy Spirit is leading us. The Holy Spirit is giving us the understanding. And in the end, we will reap the reward when our master comes to settle accounts and to give us our instructions.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you all for being here and participating. We encourage you to go to our Blog Talk Radio website and take a look around. You can download any of our nearly 800 programs. We encourage you to join us again next week on Friday for another edition of the Bible on Trial, and a week from today at 10 a.m. Pacific time for another edition of the Revelation of Jesus. Hopefully we'll be up on TalkShoe next week. We encourage you to look for that. On behalf of Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is Dennis Neufeld saying so long for now. We wish you a blessed Sabbath, and we'll see you next time. Oh, I didn't see any.
I only dropped by about 15, I'm sure.
No, like the Dow Jones average.
The sell order then.
Yeah, no, it's still 96.81.
I was going to say, but I didn't feel good enough about it on the end. So there's a sound reasoning that doesn't require one to become agnostic or Christian. I figured, well, yeah.
And that's why I said.
Well,
I didn't want to end, have the program end on that. If it'd been
I figured
earlier,
what you were
I
saying,
said it,
I figured that what you were about to say was probably not the thing we should.
I was contemplating, is that a good ending note? No, probably not.
I can't, you know what, that's the worst thing we can imagine if it's beyond that. Are we ready for that?
How can you prepare for something that you can't even imagine?
Yeah.
Allow God to pursue you.
Yeah, that's the only way. You know, how could the Israelites have prepared themselves for what they were going to experience in the wilderness without God there to?
So our job is this absolute trust in God.
Yeah.
Or you can just have faith in God that He'll protect you from all this.
Have faith
nature
that,
of the end
that
time.
It was just someone's imagination, and that will not be like that.
So, let's follow up on that. So the naysayer is not physical. I got faith, and we talk about stuff. I got faith, and it's going to be fine. How do we differentiate between faith and absolute trust?
I feel fine. I feel fine. Well, if you have faith, then everything will be fine.
And you have faith that the worst that you can imagine is a walk in the park compared to what is going to happen, then whose faith is the right faith?
Oh, cool.
If what you believe is going to happen or not going to happen, does that dictate?
That's a thing. Something that can be discussed, but it's probably not something that you can accomplish.
Oh, Dennis, we're live on radio.
We are.
Yeah.
How was that?
I don't know. This is Don, my cousin, saying he can hear everything over the radio.
Oh,
it's the microphone in there.
Oh, okay.